All right, so then let's go on to the next group, which is the, well, actually, we've just talked about it, the cleaning up the listener membership list, which was Steve. Now,
by the way, I just sent, for all information, I just sent that distillation, which I had distilled and sent before, but I just resent it to the group, so you should have it now.
Okay, thanks. So, Steve, was there ever an actual working group, or was it just you?
It was me and one other. I forgot who it was. But we never got together and did much of anything beyond the reports that I sent.
Okay, so what do you see as the next step here after we get the reports from all five staff at all five stations? How would you like to?
The next step, and what I just sent you, was the motions or the request that I would like to have been made to the ED so that we could actually go ahead and do these things. That's included in what I just sent to the group. Please let me know if you didn't get it, and I'll try to send it again. I'm on a different computer. I want to be able to take our list immediately and send it out to have an NCOA scan done so that we can get back all the corrections and start giving the people at the station a lot of time to input these corrections into the database so that when we make our actual mailing, there'll be very, very few corrections to be made, which we will then be able to make and handle, in just very quick order. But we can't do anything without, as somebody pointed out, management support.
Okay. So once we get the feedback from all five staffs, maybe, Steve, you might want to convene one working group just to see if there's any changes in the protocol that might be valuable based on feedback.
Okay. So far, right, we haven't gotten any feedback. The feedback will have to come from this committee, and then the group can chew it up.
Yeah, I mean, as of tonight, I think we have someone from all five stations who's agreed to follow up. Well, Yosh has already done it, but, Yosh, you'll write up.
Yes, I'm going to look for my notes from Terry Guy and shoot them off to Steve.
Okay, great. And then other people, as you make those contacts, if you could just—it doesn't have to be a long, involved email. It can just be a short summary of what the person said, what their concerns were, or what they thought were good. If they liked the ideas and said, no problem, I think I can adopt them all. Whatever they said, just write it up, and then we can go from there. So, Steve, if you'd be prepared once you get all five reports, if you can convene a meeting of and who else would like to work with Steve? This sounds like maybe a one or perhaps two meeting group. It's not a big commitment. Anyone else on the committee want to work with Steve? Okay, that was Bill. And Anthony, what did you say?
Oh, my question was, I was distracted for a moment. Was there a meeting time set?
No, we have to wait till all five of us who've agreed to contact the staffs have done so and written our reports, and then the working group will convene to digest those reports and see if there's any adjustments to Steve's proposal. So, I don't know, it could be 2-3 weeks, something like that.
This is Rob Robinson.
Yes.
I've not gotten Steve Brown's email yet.
I'm looking. It's not going out of the outbox. There's something wrong with the SMTP address.
Okay.
Here.
All right.
I'll work on it.
Okay. Good. Is there anything else on this point, or can we move on to the final working group? Okay. So, staffless working group, Carolyn.
Yeah, thank you. I don't have anything in writing, but we do have a problem. The things that I just sent out earlier before the meeting sort of indicate the problem. We're really at an impasse. We need management support to get staff lists. We just don't have them. We don't have them from the stations with or without staff organizing or union groups. So I think as I put out, there are motions from 2004, 2005, 2006 that just never been implemented. So as I said I would last time, I called the HR director when we still had one and asked her if we did not need a list for insurance purposes, for liability. And she said, yes, of course, the unions assume that we know who works for us should we be, should there be an injury or some sort. They assume that we have that list, but we do not. And for whatever reason, the EDs, various EDs, have never seen fit to implement those resolutions that went out. Mm-hmm. And the HR director was leaving, and she didn't feel that it was her place to do it. So, in effect, we're at an impasse. We have we don't have insubordination yet because no one's been told to do that in a direct manner. But essentially, we must have management compile the list. And I was listening to all of the problems and the costs. Most of the costs of our elections come from bad lists that have not been vetted, not been cleaned, relied upon. And I think that the staff list is even worse because we don't even know who those people are. The membership list, somewhere there are cards floating around that may not have been entered into the database, or the entry has been incorrect. There are, you know, mistakes and problems. And those things need to be vetted by real good cleanups in each station. But the staff list hasn't even been created to be cleaned up in any station. So we need to decide how we want to approach that. We've asked the PNB. I think the best thing we can do, I didn't bring a motion tonight, but I wanted to ask permission to craft a motion asking the PNB to implement those motions that have already been passed, which I put in the attachment to you. I don't want to take the time to read them, but they simply direct the general managers to create staff lists of who the unpaid staff, the volunteers, are in the station. I don't know what else to do except to ask the ED to do this. We're out of compliance. We have a legal problem. We have potential liability here without the list of volunteers. So that should stir someone, but we don't have an HR director at the moment. So we're sort of in limbo again, as we have been for several years. So I'd like to know what your suggestions or thoughts are on that.
It's Bonnie.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
I could be in favor of that. I think that the management at the station should be reminded to put those lists together. Having spent way, way too much of my time thinking about this for a long time.
You're not alone.
I find myself, conservative though this may be, I believe that the only thing that really makes sense is if the definition of volunteer staff is uniform throughout the network and it is the default definition that's within the Pacifica bylaws. And no matter how much time I take trying to think outside of that particular box, I don't get there with anything that practically works. It leads to a whole bunch of confusion and anger and just general inefficiency. It also, to my mind, leads to having almost more than a class of voters within the staff to have different requirements for each radio station for their unpaid staff. So, and the other thing that the default definition works for is that you can't have peer groups deciding who are staff. It needs to be, there has to be some sort of system at the radio station to determine who actually works there, not only for elections and for efficiency within a working group of people, but also because it's really important for us to have it vis-a-vis liability on things. So enough for me now. But that's really where I have rested on this at this point after hammering it in my head every way I possibly can.
Yeah, you've summarized the problem very well.
This is Bill.
Yes, Bill.
Yeah, I agree. It's hard to get management's attention on this, but we might be able to get their attention more if we remind them that there's a real significant cost issue involved. Everybody's focused on budget and costs and things like that, and it's easy for them to put off because, you know, they don't consider this an important or urgent item, but, you know, one of the major expenses we've had is lawsuits, and a lot of it's related to people not getting ballots and stuff like that. And here we are, you know, we need to have a good staff list. It's one of a number of things we need, as well as good membership lists in order to avoid these lawsuits and in order to avoid extra expenses mailing ballots to people with wrong addresses or, you know, having to handle emergency ballot or replacement ballots at the last minute and this kind of stuff. So I think we should work in the budgetary impact if we don't get this done soon.
Well, if I can call on myself, I definitely agree that management needs to get going on compiling lists of unpaid staff at each station, and that's overdue. And we need to figure out a way that, you know, this committee can help develop a motion that can make that happen. However, part of the problem, I believe, is that the unrealistic and kind of onerous nature of the motion that the PND passed 3 years ago, which talks about monthly updating. I mean, these staffs are overworked as it is, and the idea of kind of constantly going back and updating the list, I don't think is very realistic, and that may discourage management. And I'm not justifying it, but I'm saying it may have the effect of people throwing up their hands and saying, I'm never going to have time to do that. So I think if a more realistic interval could be set, that combined with more of a push, as Bill said, that there's both financial and you know, policy reasons why this needs to get done, I think it would be more likely to be successful.
Well, I have not called a meeting of this committee in a couple of weeks. I was waiting to get to Dominga, and then I just delayed. But perhaps if we could call the work group together, craft a motion, and bring it back to the next committee, the elections committee meeting, that might work and take into account what you're suggesting.
Okay, well,
work on that.
Okay. Anyone else want to work on that who's been on that before, Bill? Or?
I will.
Good.
And I will. So, Carolyn, if you want to float out in the next few days on email some dates for us to meet.
I will do that.
And then we'll, you know, we'll see what we can do.
Yeah, I think our problem is going to be, again, implementation. The board can pass anything it wants, but getting it done is another question.
Right. Well, clearly we need to make a coordinated presentation to the board at some point about all of these implementation problems and kind of present it as a package that we really need management's cooperation on several fronts. So, okay, is there anything else on this topic, or can we move on? Okay.
Okay, I'm finished. Thank you. That's
hearing nothing, then let's go on to Item 6, the proposed bylaws amendment regarding the National Election Supervisor and the Local Election Supervisor. Now, this is something that came out of, actually, the Personnel Committee, and that may seem strange, but the reason was that there were some problems that came up with the status of the National Local Election Supervisor in terms of California employment law. And so the result is that legal counsel is recommending a bylaws amendment to eliminate that ambiguity that may cause these problems. Hold on one second. I'll pull up on screen the draft, which I sent out yesterday. I sent it out originally a week earlier, and I resent it yesterday. Is there anyone here who has not had time to read this draft bylaws amendment?
Perhaps. I don't know. I can't remember if I read it a week ago, but yeah. I know I've not reviewed it recently.
I'm not certain either, but I'll call it up right now.
Okay. Well, I'm not proposing that we vote on it tonight, but at least let's have some preliminary discussion. So I'll read it. Well, let me actually read the preface that, or the explanatory note from Jack Van Aken. Let's see. Well, let me start with Dan Siegel's note to the board. I've reviewed the proposed changes to the bylaws. This is an earlier draft about changing some of the terms of the NES and the LES. While I see nothing unlawful about the changes, I'm not sure they accomplish what you are seeking in terms of clarifying that the NES and the LES are independent contractors rather than Pacifica employees. I'm confident that eliminating the language on the duties, this is what the earlier draft had done, just simply took out all the specific details of what the NES and LES does. So Dan writes that eliminating the language on the duties of the NES and LES does not make any difference as to whether the Employment Department of California or another government agency will view them as employees or contractors. Rather, to solve the employee-contractor problem, I see two actions. First, the bylaws should be altered to state in Section A, quote, the executive director shall, and the new wording would be, contract with an individual or organization to serve as the national election supervisor, and then back to the original language, to oversee and certify the fairness of the delegate elections in each station and to confirm said elections compliance with these bylaws. Likewise, in Section B, language should indicate the national election supervisor shall contract with an individual or organization subject to the approval of the executive director to serve as the local election supervisor. And then the language, to fix some ambiguous language that's currently there, it would specify to be eligible for the appointment to the position of local election supervisor, a person shall not be a current employee of the foundation, et cetera, et cetera. Because that was another thing about whether the bylaws meant that you couldn't be simultaneously be an employee or at the time you're appointed, and so this would kind of clean up that language. So as I understand it, that is kind of the gist of this particular proposal. Now, people on this committee may have other proposals for altering that section of the bylaws, but conceptually this is aimed mainly at eliminating this problem with the California state government as far as seeing our NES and LES as employees rather than contractors. And, of course, once you're an employee, you have rights to unemployment and various other, you know, rights that employees have. And this is to eliminate that misunderstanding. So any questions or comments on this?
I think Dan's suggestions make sense.
Okay. Anyone else? Well, I'm surprised. Okay, no other comments. Well, I take it people would like some time to read this and maybe vote on it the next meeting?
Yeah, I have a question, Carolyn, here.
Go ahead.
I'm wondering, have we vetted this with anyone else, with EDG or any other government organizations or professional organizations or unions that deal with this sort of thing, or is this just our own Foundation Council?
I don't know the answer to that, but I know that this came out of some contacts that Dominga, the Human Resources Director, had with EDD. So whether she went back and or whether she was even still here when this final language was drafted, I don't know. But perhaps that's something that I could check with Dan Siegel just to see if, you know, he's run it past them or, you know, or anyone else.
Yosh for the stack.
Yosh, go ahead.
I'm not going to, I mean, you're certainly more than free to, you know, run that by or inquire of Dan Siegel. But I would just say, you know, I deal with EDD almost on a daily basis.
Oh, good.
In a different context. And I would say that there's probably no one at EDD who's going to give you an advisory opinion as to, you know, what will pass muster. Basically, they're on the other side of the fence, and they're not going to do our work for us. What they're going to do is if they find something is fishy, then they're going to, you know, take us into litigation. It's really the administrative law judge that will say, well, based on your bylaws or whatever, I fine for either plaintiff or for defendant. And that's the way it's going to shake out. And so, you can ask Dan Siegel whether he will contact EDD, but I don't think you're going to get very far.
Thank you. That's very helpful.
Bob, this is Leslie.
Yes.
Unfortunately, I have to go to another meeting, but I would vote, if we're going to discuss this further at another meeting, I would vote in favor of that. And I got to go run.
Okay.
That's all, and talk to you next time.
All right. Thanks, Leslie.
All right.
Okay. Well, any other comments or suggestions on this issue?
A question for Yosh.
Yes.
Yosh, is there another organization that we could ask for an opinion on this that you would recommend other than the EDD?
Unless you can get a hold of some labor, ALJ, administrative law judge, who specializes in labor, specifically just labor, uh-huh. labor, and labor. Then you might, you know, they might be able to point you towards either some case law or give you an off-the-cuff, informal,
mm-hmm.
you know, opinion. But that's the only thing I could suggest at this time.
All right. Thank you.
Sure.
Okay. Is there anything else on this issue? All right. Then. My understanding is that we will come back and vote on this at the next meeting, so I would suggest if anyone comes up with amended language between now and then, please circulate it to the list so we have time to think about it. Otherwise, we'll just vote on the proposal that's before us. Okay? All right. The next item is the proposed bylaws amendment on affiliate director elections. Now, that was sent to us by Jack Van Aken. He wrote, attached his proposed bylaws amendment intended to address the inconsistency between seating of affiliate directors with other directors so that all may be seated in January of each year, as has already been the most recent custom. I hope the coordinating committee will review this proposed amendment, and I further seek the support of 5 directors after careful consideration. I also hope that the coordinating committee will consider and propose a special rule of order to accommodate the current custom of holding the affiliate's director's election early for this year. I am CCing Bob Lederer as acting chair of the elections committee. Before we get into the substance of this, I want to ask if the committee believes this really falls within our area of purpose, because my understanding is that this committee, I couldn't find the original motion of the PNB creating this committee. It's not in the bylaws. It was created specially, but that it was to look at problems with the delegate elections at each of the 5 stations, not internal elections that are held by the board itself. So I don't really believe this is properly before our committee. What are other people's opinions?
Carolyn on the stock.
Go ahead.
I do believe that question has come up before, and Dave Adelson was able to dredge up the original language and interpret it to mean all elections in the PNB and in the internal elections, not just the delegate elections, but. That said, I don't know that even with that broad an interpretation for this committee that this belongs here. This changes the timeline, does it not?
Right, correct.
And the coordinating committee has already recommended it to the PNB, or did Jack send it to us laterally for a second opinion? Or I'm not sure of the route that it's followed here.
Yeah, let me check again here.
Okay, can I jump
in? Oh, sure, go ahead, Yosh.
Now, I'm looking at the Pacifica Foundation website, and there is a proposed amendment to Article 5, Section 4A and 4B regarding the Board of Directors of the Foundation, the nomination and the election of the affiliate representative. And
So that's the formal notice that's been put out?
Yes, it's been noticed. It's got, got six directors. It's got Nia, Ithia, Sarb, Rob, James, and Jack.
Well, in that case, it's sort of a moot point because with the 60-day notice, it's not, you know, if we had, well, whatever. I think that makes it even less sensible for us to spend time on it. Does anyone disagree with and think that our committee should discuss the content of this?
I think it would be moot. I mean, whether
yay
or nay, it's right. Really out of our hands at this point. It's up to the rest of the network.
I agree.
The delegate assemblies, et cetera, to vote yay or nay on the change of date.
Okay.
Did Jack send it to us as a result of a vote or a motion that we need to respond to and say thank you? But
He just said he's CCing it, you know, to our committee, but he didn't say anything formal.
Yeah, okay, then it does seem moot.
Okay, so that's I think we can move on from that. All right, the next item. Sorry. Find this where we are.
Excuse me, do we need to tell them that we have no opinion on it?
No.
They're not waiting for us.
Yeah, this was August 22nd, so I guess they had to move on since then. So I don't think Jack is expecting to hear back from me.
Okay,
so the next on the agenda is the motion from long ago by Rob Robinson, referred to us by the PNB to set up a task force on elections. So, Rob, I know you didn't come to this meeting prepared to present this, and I know many months have intervened and a lot of work has been done on this committee, but is there any aspect of your motion that you still think is, you know, we should move forward on, separate from all the working groups we already have in motion?
I've not been able to follow this as closely, this committee, as closely as I should, for which I apologize. My concern is that we still have problems with the way we do elections. I think that in the discussion tonight, there's certain areas where we know we can save lots of money. One has to do with the way we do database maintenance and management for our membership list. One is the printing, and the other is the mailing of these documents. And I think obviously we can make significant savings and make the election simpler if we go to an internet-based approach. We're already trying to look, as the committee has demonstrated, you're taking steps to reach out to other organizations, but I still believe that one of the things that we have to take a look at is making a tough decision to go to an internet-based form of voting, which will, in my view, relieve us of a lot of the areas for dispute. And in fact, while many people claim that this is going to exacerbate the digital divide, I think it's going to make it easier for people to vote.
Me too.
So that's one of my major concerns. I think that what's going to happen is as the finances of the network contract, as we continue to lose audience, you know, one of the things that's going to happen in the electoral process is that there's going to be pressure from management to close the electoral process down altogether. And if we don't have in place a fairly solid solution for making the democratic election process work, we're going to be in trouble. I think the other thing that's really hurt us in terms of our commitment to democracy ever since the legal settlement is that we really have not permitted the elections to get on the air at the local stations. We, as everybody here that's been through this process knows, you have to fight desperately to get any time at all to get the fact that the elections are coming up, and to notify people that they can take out petitions to run for election is basically underreported on our airwaves. And then when the election comes on, very, very little time is allocated to talking about the issues before Pacifica as a network and why it's important to have a board that's playing a role in these things. So in many cases, you see Pacifica falling further and further behind technologically what's happening at other non-commercial stations. And my sense is that the thing that we have failed to come to grips with is we still can't get on the air at our local stations to promote the democracy, you know, which is part of our bylaws and part of what many of us that fought the legal suit believed was going to help change our culture. So those are the points that I continue to be concerned about. I do believe that things like list maintenance, mailings, and printing for the elections would be better handled by a contractor than by a national election supervisor that works with contractors. I really do believe that internet voting is a way for us to make a significant change and bring the elections under control. But I continue to believe that one of the fundamental problems that we have is our lack of access to our own local station airwaves. So that said, does that answer your question, Bob?
Mostly, yeah. The one part in your motion that I thought was interesting that may be moot now that, we've done a lot of work, but also we are now talking about putting out an RFP to perhaps some of the same organizations that you had actually proposed be part of the task force to look mm-hmm. at how to fix our elections. So my yep. question then becomes, are there any organizations that you think are not likely, or even individuals, who are not likely to want to actually apply to get money from Pacifica and therefore wouldn't have any conflict of interest, but that have certain expertise that would be valuable to start inviting them to some of our working group meetings or committee meetings just to share, you know, suggestions about how to improve our elections?
Actually, Bob, I mean, I think what you're touching on is I think what's been missing in the process in the past. I think that there are intelligent people from organizations like True Ballot and I forget what Terry Barishas's organization is called. But I think one of the things that this committee should do is interview folks like that and say, here are our problems. This is what we're dealing with. How do you think we can fix them effectively? And what should our scoping process be so that we can come out with RFPs. You know, many of your ideas, Bob, in terms of the RFP process that I've heard tonight are very, very simple and elegant, and I think that they reflect things that we haven't done in the past. So I think, yeah, the thing that you should do is exactly that, is bring some of these individuals to the committee, and I think we should be very blunt in saying these are the problems we're having with these elections. What's the best way to fix them, and how should we proceed to do that in a way that we can get the interest of organizations that want to do this type of work and that have experience working with progressive organizations?
Bonnie.
Go ahead.
I agree with most of that. The only proviso I would have, and I think it would be really valuable for us to have some people to lean on a little bit that have experience with all of these different systems. The only thing is that we not go to people that we are intending to issue this RFP to.
I was going to agree with you.
It would be a little twisted.
Yeah, that's somewhat of a conflict
that we
of interest.
And I really wouldn't want to jeopardize any particular organization's ability to actually bid on this, because they came on and talked on a working group. That would be really unfortunate, I think. And you know, as far as internet voting, I'm completely for it. I just sensed from the different discussions that we've had on the election committee that an awful lot of people have reservations. I personally believe that a lot more people are internet familiar and able to do many, many tasks in their lives through the internet and online. And I wish that we could get it there, because what Rob was saying is absolutely true. We're really in a crunch here, and who knows when this is going to get better as far as money that we are able to raise to run this network. And, you know, these election costs are big and looming, and you can't help but look at them and know that we have to do something, and we're in the midst of making really tough decisions as far as finances and the way that we run these radio stations. We're going to have to also look at elections. It's not going to work for us to just say, oh, we're afraid that won't work. We're going to have to come up with ways to cut the cost of these.
Steve Brown?
And Carolyn on the stack, please.
Steve and then Carolyn.
One thing, and I apologize if I missed this in the long history of this committee, is that I don't see anywhere before us a list of the full cost of our elections broken down by specific area of cost. So much for the outgoing mailing, so much for the incoming mailing, so much for the supervisors, so we can see what we're attacking. My quick guess is that the outgoing mailings, with the envelopes, the candidate booklet, the ballot, whatever else is in, is about $250 a thousand, or at least that's what it should cost if it were done properly as it was printed last time. That's about $16,000 to $18,000 for the entire foundation, and we're devoting an awful lot of time in figuring out how to cut costs for something that may not be a very significant part of the election process. And do we have such a breakdown of costs so we'll know where we might most profitably direct our energies?
Let me direct that to Yosh, because I believe, Yosh, several months ago you wrote a letter to Nicole Swaya and Lonnie Hicks, is that right, asking for such a breakdown? Do I remember correctly?
And if I recall, Nicole said, oh, thanks for your inquiry. I will pass it along to staff. And I'm pretty sure, I guess, both she and I dropped the ball, because I don't recall getting a response, because if I did receive a response, then I would have, you know, shared it with the committee. I'll have to take a look, but
we're really working in the dark.
Right. Well, I know you have a lot on your plate, Yosh, but I think Steve is right. It would be very helpful to us if we could get those cost breakdowns. So I know personnel are a bit in flux right now, but if there's somebody you can find at the national office who could answer those questions, that would be really helpful.
Okay.
This is Bill.
Yeah, Bill.
You want me to ask Mike Martin? You know, he's chair of the finance committee.
Sure. The more the merrier. Maybe both of you could ask, you know, simultaneously, and somewhere along the line we might get an answer.
Well, Mike might come back and say, you know, I thought I charged the elections committee about three. I thought finance charged the elections committee about 3 months ago to come up with a plan, and we, you know,
yeah, that's
you've
true.
Been silent for 3 months, and now you're asking me for or us for information.
We could
actually, you know, no, seriously. I'm sorry. Just one quick comment, Bill. You know, joking aside, I don't think Mike is the person, not for any negative reason about Mike, but because that's not really his purview, is to kind of go into the details of exactly how that function breaks down. That really is a staff function. So I think we should leave it to Yosh to just pursue it with whoever is the appropriate staff person.
May I address that?
Sure. And then Steve, I think, had something else.
Yeah, I just wanted to suggest that Yosh might do better asking Lynn at the office. She keeps a tight rein on the books.
That was my plan, Carolyn.
Yeah, okay. She probably knows.
Fine.
Could I get some feedback from people as to what sort of a breakdown you want on election costs? One is certainly mailings and possibly remailings. One is printing.
Salaries paid out.
Salaries. Okay.
I think, that, don't the final reports from the supervisors have some of that in there, at least a framework?
I've never seen a final report that had a budget listed.
Something else, Steve Brown, that we might, I was about to suggest that a lot of this information we could work at by going backwards. For example, I can construct a fairly accurate cost of outgoing mailings just from looking at standard costs for different pieces. That's not hard. But things like the cost of handling complaints, that's a combination of administrative hours, of letters, of postage, of things that might not be accounted for in any specific way somewhere under an official title, which doesn't mean we should ignore them because they might constitute a very large factor of hidden costs that we don't really see.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just worried about devoting a lot of time to some element of elections that isn't really worth the effort. Because I just looked at a quick sketch of what all our outgoing ballot mailers were, and for the five stations together, it's about $5,000 per station on an average, and that's junk. That's not worth
your
time.
Are you counting that as first class? Because that's what it's been, even though I agree with you, it doesn't have to be in the future.
It didn't mail first class, Bob. I looked before I left New York. I happened to look at my ballot mailing. And the postage on it was $0.08 or $0.09, and that's cost of a standard nonprofit mailing.
I see. Okay.
And so they didn't mail first class.
Okay. Well, so I guess it would be the original ballot mailing, and then the cost of mailing replacement ballots. And then in terms of personnel costs, things like complaints are part of the contract that each NES and LES has to deal with. They have a fixed number of hours per week. They're all part-time. And whether there's five complaints or 500, they have to deal with it. There's per hour.
At a certain level.
I'm sorry?
There's a minimum that they insist on, and then anything above that number of complaints, there's a charge. Like when you rent a car, you get 100 free miles plus.
You know that for a fact that that's been written into our contracts?
My
knowledge is that sitting on the PNB, all I was ever told was that we had a fixed contract of X number of hours.
That was expanded exponentially at BAI. They kept extending the local supervisor's salary and time.
No, that's because the election got delayed. But not,
exactly. But
that's different than what Steve is saying, which is because of a high volume of complaints. That's
some of it was.
As far as salary.
But if you have a fixed contract, what I'm saying is, from my knowledge, no organization would ever give you a fixed contract no matter what. Law firms.
We did. They were hired.
You saw it. I didn't. I'm only.
I haven't seen the document, but that's what the board was told.
Okay.
They're hired for I think 25 hours a week from a certain date to the close date or to a month after the close date of the
right.
The board
but
was supposed to be the close date.
Bob,
more
this
than
is Bob.
Yes.
Can I make a suggestion?
Go ahead, Rob.
Close this up.
Yes.
It seems to me that if we simply look at the expenditures that were made for the election, and if we look at the agreements that exist, the contractual agreements, even if they're one-page agreements
right.
that exist with the vendors for the last election, we're going to have a very clear sense of what they spent money on. I think we're not going to have to keep arguing about this back and forth.
I think one of the things
that concerns me about what's happened in the past election cycles is that we don't seem to have established strong relationships with any vendors in this area, so that every year one of the things that we're told by the National Election Supervisor is a problem is that they are negotiating contracts with mailing houses and printers and for postage and all this sort of thing, and we don't ever seem to have a clear path towards what we're doing year by year and improving on what we've done in previous years. So I think the best thing for us to do is take a look both at the contractual documents that we have with the vendors and the vendor agreements and the amounts that were paid out so that we'll know what was going on. And my guess is
that these things are not going to be that extensive, that none of us can't look at them within the scope of a day and figure out what's going on.
Yeah, Carolyn on the stack here, if I may.
Yeah, no, I think that's a fine suggestion. Go ahead, Carolyn.
Yeah, one of the this is a real issue that Rob raises. I understand that, there were no competitive bids for the mailing house, and that has been a recurring problem at Pacifica for all the mail drops and so on. There have been no competitive bidding, and it's been done on a personal basis, who knew whom, how long we've been working with these people. But I think it's time maybe to look into that, and we could certainly save some money. I know at one point, Steve, correct me if I'm wrong on this, but Steve had arranged for a mailing house and had to use one that the national office insisted on that cost us considerably because of their insistence on using another house. And again, that was not the result of competitive bidding. It was just an arrangement that had been made by people. And I think that really should stop. So we need to get a handle on what we have been spending and how we've been doing it, and I suspect that that could be done better. And then my other suggestion was, going back to the discussion, the suggestion that Rob made, that we invite some experts to talk. I think the first one we should invite is the head of MEMSIS to talk to us about what needs to be done at our databases and get some professional input as to what he thinks needs to be done, because he's had a lot to say about it over the years, and a lot of his advice has been ignored, much to our dismay and cost. So I think if we, I forget Nick's last name, but invite him in to give us some advice on what he thinks needs to be done at each station, I think that would be really helpful. Those two things alone, I think, would save us a good deal of money.
Okay, well, we're going to have to wrap up. It's almost 10:30.
Nick Frolick, by the way.
Thank you. Could we agree to perhaps look into inviting him? Is there any reason not? We're not going to be asking for an RFP from him, and we certainly could take some advice on how to clean up the databases.
Well, my only question about that is I would like to see exactly what questions we're going to be asking before we just invite him onto a call. I'm not really clear on that. So, Carolyn, if you could write up kind of a
summary. I would do it just the other way around, ask him what he would like to tell us. Because he's had to deal with the complaint.
We should have both approaches are valid.
Yeah, we need to have questions in the dialogue.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's important. He's going to tell us what he thinks in any case.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So both
that's good. I can write something up, sure.
Do you want his phone number? I have it for you.
All right,
well,
I do. Thank you.
You can do that offline.
Thank you.
So,
may I have a spelling, please, for Nick's last name?
H-E-R-L-I-C-K. Thank you.
Okay,
it's
now
Bob
back to...
Bonnie, I have a comment.
Okay, is this... Because I want us to wrap up this point about what kind of information you should be requesting from the staff. Is it to that question or something else? Okay, go ahead,
Bonnie. It's to the budget for elections.
Yeah.
I know that we were all ways to not perhaps have to go to the national office since they're so overloaded with stuff right now. But you know what? We really need the real information as to what was really spent. I don't think we can come up with some estimate from working backwards. There are too many anomalies in each of these elections. Too many things that went wrong and ended up costing extra money. And I would, for one, would really like to see just a spreadsheet of each election and what it's cost. And I'd like to see it from the viewpoint of what we actually spent.
Okay.
Yeah, I think that makes sense, although,
mm-hmm.
you know, it may be
that
hard to get a full-fledged spreadsheet in the short term, so, you know, maybe it could be a two-stage process if the staff people need that time, is to just get us a few of the core figures if they're quickly accessible right away, and then the more worked-out spreadsheet afterwards.
Right.
Yeah, definitely. And so just to wrap this up, Yosh, so it would be printing, mailing, contracting with mailing houses for you know, the expenses of doing the mailings at all five stations, or for all five stations. The employee, or well, whatever they're called, the personnel costs. We'll use that term. The personnel costs for the six people involved, the NES and the five LESs, and any other people that I believe there were one or two assistants that were hired at different stages in the process. Definitely for the backup. For the replacement ballots, there was a backup person. So any of those personnel costs, and also what span of time, because as Carolyn pointed out, at BAI, the personnel costs went on for many months because the election went on for many months, whereas at other stations it was the conventional time period. So getting that, those figures. Is there anything?
One thing you left out.
Yeah, go ahead.
Things you left out.
Yep.
It should be made clear that we want the cost of the mailing should include the outgoing mailing plus mailing the ballots back to the to Pacifica.
Well, what do you mean mailing them back? How is that a cost to Pacifica?
Because we have to pay for the postage on the return envelope.
Oh, okay. I thought it was an empty. You had to put your own stamp on.
It might be, but I don't know which it was, and it might go either way. I'm not sure what it was in the last election. The other thing is
that we need to see what the
Hold on, Rob. Steve's almost done.
One more point. Even though we don't expect it to recur, I think we ought to include the cost of all the litigation around the disputes around the elections. Some portion of that is bound to recur, and we have to allow for it in the budget. So let's know what it was last time and do something about it.
Bob? Rob? Rob was next, then Bonnie.
Yeah, I think we want to ask to look at what the contractual agreements were.
Right.
Assuming that there were contractual agreements, and simply to ask, was this done competitively, or were these sole source agreements? And that's a simple yes, no. You know, it was either competitive or not.
I don't know that Lynn Magno will be able to tell us whether
it
was competitive.
Well, I respectfully do think that if in the vendor file they're going to have a copy of a contractual agreement, if there was any, and what the specifications for that were. If it's not there, where is it going to be? We don't have a procurement office.
If
it's there, it indicates that it occurred. If it's not there, the indication is that it did not occur. And yes, I think they're going to have that information.
If you're talking about the mailing house, I know that they were not competitive. I can vouch for that. There was no competitive bidding.
I'm not disagreeing with you. I'm just what I'm saying is that asking that question of someone in the finance office is not an onerous task.
Right.
It's not like they have to go to someone in procurement and contracting and ask to look at their files. Their files are going to indicate that there was a contractual agreement or there was not, and there was a bid on it or there was not. And they just answer that yes or no, there was or there wasn't.
And we know there was a contract with the NES, because that was mentioned to the board.
That's correct.
We'd like a copy of that.
That's correct. And my guess is that that's going to be in the finance files. It's much more likely that it's going to be in the finance office files than it's going to be in the human resource files, if you ask me. Based on my experience.
Okay, was it Bonnie next, I believe?
I think so.
Yeah, go ahead.
I am hopeful that within the budgets it will also show us travel expenses for the National Election Supervisor. Would like to also, and any other expenses, because I believe we had to buy them equipment. I think we should look at the fact that in 2006, that we spent upwards of $25,000 buying scanners. I think that we should look at not just litigation specifically, but I would also see if there is a line item for legal assistance and opinions throughout the election cycles, because I know that we've had to go to our attorneys many times when the election supervisor mm-hmm. when there were thorny questions that couldn't be answered and they had
right.
to be settled by corporate counsel. And I wish there were a way to quantify it, but I don't think there is. Just the look, there is a certain cumbersome quality to trying to put elections on the air, but there is no way to quantify that. So, so let's just try to get the real expenses of this.
Okay, Yosha, are you clear now on what you're asking for?
Too clear.
Yeah, I know. It's a bit overwhelming, but yeah. I'm sure you'll do fine with that.
Okay,
okay, so can we close out this topic? And I just realized there's one other thing that should be real fast that I forgot to mention at the outset, which is there's a PNB meeting coming up on September 19th and 20th. So would the committee agree that I should seek to give a report there? And if so, I would write it and circulate it for comment beforehand. I mean, at this point, I don't think we have any motions before them, so it would really be summarizing the work of our working groups and where we're at in the process and what's coming up.
Bob,
go ahead.
Not correct, I think. We do have the three motions that I made in the email that I just sent you about 20 minutes ago for list cleaning, and if we don't have an ED, at least we'll have a PNB. Somebody should be able to say, okay, clean our list, for Pete's sake, now, so we have enough time to work on the changes before the election.
Right, but my recollection of how we left that was that until we've gotten the feedback from the staffs at the five stations, we wouldn't vote on those motions because they might need to be tweaked based
correct.
On that feedback.
Correct,
so
but
I can preview for them the idea that we will be bringing forward motions on that topic, but not offer them formally for a vote at this PNB meeting, but that we'll come back by the next teleconference in October with some specific motions.
Okay.
Any other feedback about my report? I mean, obviously, like I said, I'll send around a draft. Okay. If there's no other comments, I'm about to adjourn. Last call for anything urgent anyone
needs
to say.
Good night, everybody.
Gee, I thought I could stay on for another 3/4 hour. Sorry.
Well, we'll leave the phone lines open for you.
Thanks to those of you on the tax forces that have been working on all this stuff, the RFPs and all that, the mailings and all that. Thank you.
Sure thing.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thanks, everyone, for your work.
Thank you, Bob.
Okay, good night.
Good night.
Good night, all.
Good night.